Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Friday, 22nd of October, 2021. Today we bring the second half of the interview we recorded last week, Tuesday, October 12th, with Kathy Wood of the ARK Innovation Fund, representing the Saxo Strategy Team, where Peter Garnery, our Head of Equity and Quantitative Strategy, and our Chief Investment Officer, Stane Jakobsen. You can find the first part in yesterday's episode of this interview, and if you prefer to see the full length all in one go in a video format, you can follow the link in the podcast description. So again, without further ado, here is the second part of this great interview. Enjoy.
But we want to explore a few other things with you as well, Kathy. And one is, of course, with the highlight that's always on you, when you started to sell China, it became a big issue, not only in US press, but certainly in Asia as well. And we have a question here from our friends in the investment community called West Money, good colleagues of us. They're asking, what are your views on China tech stock with the recent regulatory crackdowns by the Chinese government? And let me extend the question saying, they are really asking you, how do you see the Chinese valuation? Do you see a future for Chinese technology platform and stocks? And how do they compare in one question?
Yes, well, we started pulling out after Jack Ma was effectively banished for something he said to a legislative committee focused on the financial services sector. Now, I read what he said, and to me, I'm sure I missed something culturally because I didn't see anything insulting, but they were terribly insulted, and he is effectively gone, or now he's doing charitable good works. That was a red flag for us, but we didn't know how much of a red flag until we started seeing the heavy hand in terms of regulation on gaming and social networks. And yesterday I saw that the government is now investigating regulators, financial regulators, and how they have regulated the financial system. And they're going after financial systems and their regulators. So there is a real, if I can say it, it's a bit of a purge going on right now, quite anti-capitalist, I would say, but there are still ways to invest. And we have cut down in our flagship portfolio, you'll see no Chinese stocks because our flagship portfolio is our highest conviction names. But in our autonomous technology and robotics portfolio, we do own a few names that have a few characteristics. One, very low gross margins. Profitability, the government does not consider profitability consistent with common prosperity, which is the new buzz phrase there. So JD Logistics, JD.com, Pinduoduo, names like that have very low margins, and they are serving common prosperity by moving into tier three, tier four cities and bringing logistics and online shopping opportunities to people who have not had them before. So they are consistent. We have kept a toehold in Tencent despite the gaming regulations because we do know that the Chinese government wants the digital yuan to be the reserve currency of Asia. And really only Tencent can help the Chinese government proliferate the digital yuan in the way it wants. But other than that, we have cut our exposures significantly.
So what I hear you saying is that you still think there's opportunity, and I think you're on the record for saying as long as it's government sanctioned assets, and that, you know, but right now it seems we have too much noise in the talk of the market for going on. I think Peter has a follow-up question, which it goes to some of that, but in the U.S., Peter.
Yes, because, I mean, the regulation that is going on in China, we've talked a lot in our team whether that could suddenly, you know, come to Europe or even the U.S. I mean, you're regulating the number of hours kids are gaming because it is, you know, you can talk about engagement or you can call it addiction. It's probably, you know, the same thing maybe. But we were talking about to what extent that will come to the U.S. But also you saw the front page, I guess, on with Mark Zuckerberg on Time Magazine. And to what extent do you think platforms will be regulated? Facebook, are we seeing the seeds of an regulation coming to the U.S.?
Well, I think there's a chance more in Europe. Your regulatory regime tends to come after companies even in the U.S. before the U.S. regulatory regimes do. So I think there may be some of that in Europe. In the U.S., my sense is there will not be that much at the margin everywhere. Yes. I do have a little bit of a differentiated view on gaming, and it's born of my own experience not in gaming. I'm not a gamer, but I'm watching employees come into ARC, and they are, if you've ever looked at our team page, they're very young. And what I've noticed is I can tell the difference in terms of strategic vision and understanding, decisiveness, and critical thought processes. I can tell the difference between gamers and non-gamers. So if anyone were to bring me in front of Congress to be an advocate for gaming, I would be. I think it's part of our new age. And, you know, I raised my children in Montessori schools, and we were told not to let our children game. But I saw something different. My son was the gamer, not my daughter's. And I saw how his thought process developed much more quickly than my girls did in terms of this idea of strategic decision-making and decisiveness. So that's a little bit on my soapbox. The lessons from Microsoft, at least here in the United States, trying to break up Microsoft, tells me this is going to last 10 years. We're going to see a lot of deliberation about it, a lot of tweaks at the margin. I don't think we'll be breaking up our companies at all. And I do think when there is a problem out there, technology can take care of it. So if you think about blockchain technology, that is going to be the kiss of death for the data aggregators that have grown up on the internet, the Amazons, the Googles, the Facebooks. And if Gen Z gets up in arms with the lack of privacy, I don't see it in millennials, but maybe Gen Z will go there, then these platforms are going to lose a lot of their power. Let the market take care of it. And just another example here in the United States, the AT&T, the monopoly telephone system, was broken up into 8 baby bells. What happened over the next 30 years? Because technology was changing the world of telecommunications, those companies started faltering and they had to consolidate again. So all that for nothing.
All right. Thanks. We have to talk, of course, about electrical vehicles and your bet in that technology vector, of course, is Tesla. And there's a lot of debate about Tesla. You know, have the bar been raised in terms of, you know, being a car manufacturer? There's certainly a lot of new car manufacturers out there. And there's some great numbers from Credit Suisse that since 1950, there hasn't been a U.S. company with a starting point of $6 billion of revenue that grew for 50% annualized for 10 years, as Elon Musk says that he believes Tesla can do. So the question to you is, Do you think that Tesla is this one outlier that will defy all the previous numbers we have on U.S. companies in terms of the growth opportunities? Is it that big?
We do believe it is that big. So if you look at the revenue growth the last 5 years, it's compounded at roughly 48% per year. And that was, as you recall, when Tesla was experiencing quite a bit of controversy. Our forecast for the next 10 years is in the 50 to 60% range. Depends if you take our bull or our bear case. And there are a few reasons. There are four barriers to entry that seem to have gotten higher in Tesla's favor. The first is battery technology. So Tesla is the only car manufacturer, with the exception of just a couple in China, the only car manufacturer that decided to ride down the cost curve of the consumer electronics industry using batteries that we find in our laptops, our cell phones. And when Tesla decided to do that, auto manufacturers actually laughed at it, as did auto analysts, because there were well advertised or publicized battery blowups on airplanes. And so there was a banning of that kind of battery. So because of that, its costs are so much lower today. The cost of its battery or its battery pack system is so much lower than other auto manufacturers that if they really want to compete with Tesla, they're going to have to lose money in electric vehicles while their gas-powered vehicle sales are falling. That the alternative will be less power or less range. So we're seeing a lot of permutations around that. So battery, still 3 to 4 years ahead in terms of cost declines of other auto manufacturers who decided to use lithium ion pouch technology as opposed to the cylindrical batteries that Tesla uses. The second barrier to entry, and this I think is the critical one from a valuation and a growth point of view. Tesla is the only auto manufacturer to have designed its own chip. Tesla is taking a leaf from Apple's book. If you remember in the day, Apple was the upstart. Nokia, Motorola, and Ericsson were the winners in the cell phone space. Apple was this upstart that had the point of view, Steve Jobs, that this was not just a phone, it was going to become a computer in our pockets. And he was right. And I'll never forget the delight I felt when I was able to access the internet on my phone. I just thought this was revolutionary. The others didn't follow. They didn't have their own chip. They didn't have the vision. And today, even today, when Apple's market share has gone down to 12%, it takes most of the profits out of the global smartphone market. And then the other two barriers to entry. So the artificial intelligence chip, why is that important? This is all about autonomous travel. And it's the only one doing this. And we believe that the other barrier to entry they have is the billions upon billions upon billions of miles of real world driving data that Tesla has accumulated so that with its AI expertise, Andrei Karpathy is the expert in autonomous transportation. They now have more corner cases to train their systems on than any other company. It's not going to be possible for these companies to catch up because Tesla already has more than a million robots, including my Model 3, roaming around, collecting data and sending it back every day. And then the other barrier to entry, which I'm surprised this one still exists, is over-the-air software updates. I got my Model 3 in 2018, and I've never had to take it in for a problem. Tesla apparently has diagnosed any problems I've had and corrected them before I see them or experience them. The only problem I've had is a nail in a tire, and of course, software could not correct that, but that was it. And so those four barriers to entry have given Tesla the lead. Our base case is $3,000 in 5 years from $800 today. And our confidence in that has grown because what we're seeing now is Tesla able to scale EV manufacturing in a way that no one else, except perhaps BYD in China, no one else is doing this yet. And Tesla had to go through a huge learning curve to get there. This is not like the manufacturing of traditional autos. It's a completely different game. And so we believe that Tesla's market share, we used to say we thought Tesla would take 25% of the electric vehicle market in 5 years. Now we're saying we believe Tesla will take 25% of the total vehicle market in 5 years. And we think electric will be nearly half of total vehicles sold.
Kathy, talking about targets, I know I'm almost embarrassed to ask this question, but you also, of course, I need to ask you about Bitcoin. I think everyone under the age of 40, which unfortunately I'm not, but anyone under the age of 40 will come after me if I don't ask you if you still are that bullish, and I let you define yourself how bullish you are on it. And maybe for me, the old boy here, to talk a little about the network effect that you think, I presume it's driving this effect.
Sure. We gained our first exposure to Bitcoin in 2015 when it was a $6 billion network. Today, it's about a $1 trillion network in a $2 trillion new asset class. And that what I just said is very important, new asset class, because institutions have to look at Bitcoin. The correlation of returns here is very, very low relative to any other asset base. The highest correlation between Bitcoin and other assets is real estate, and that's a 0.3. That's the highest. If you look at most others, very low correlations. This is what institutional investors are seeking. We had a bit of a pullback this year after Elon Musk put Bitcoin on Tesla's balance sheet, Square as well, MicroStrategy as well. And the pullback was all about environmental. Is Bitcoin going to, is it consuming too much energy? Is it going to create too many bad environmental impacts? And so we had the setback from 64,000 to about 30,000. Now we're closing in on 60,000 again. And I think partly because of our work with Square, we held a conference called The B Word, and it was all about the misconceptions around Bitcoin in particular. And environmental is one of them. I remember the same argument being made about the internet in the 90s and early 2000s, that the consumption of electricity was outrageous. It was that of a major country. I forget which one they were using at the time. And of course, we can see how the internet has transformed our lives and increased access to the emerging markets through this little thing called the mobile phone, the computer, and transform lives in such a good way. You can say there are side effects there, but I think everyone agrees that the internet has been a good thing. Bitcoin is the first private, global, rules-based monetary system that the world has ever known. We believe that El Salvador, what's happening in El Salvador, is unbelievable. Today, because the president decided that El Salvador was going to step out and innovate, the president there has given every one of his citizens $30 worth of Bitcoin in a Chivo wallet. Now, if you look at that country, only 1.2 million out of 4 million adults have banking accounts. Already today, roughly 3 million have downloaded the Chivo wallet and are using it not just to get access to that $30, but to do peer-to-peer exchange. So when you talk about the network effect, we think remittances will be one of the most important, and I believe we have numbers on that remittances account for a disproportionate amount of the activity. We believe emerging markets are going to embrace Bitcoin, get away from many of them have corrupt regimes, and they don't trust their monetary authorities. They don't trust their politicians generally. And so we think emerging markets are a huge use case here. And we believe that use case alone, if we take away the four major money supplies that probably aren't going to change that much, that use case alone Will add, I believe the number is 200,000. If it were adopted fully throughout the emerging markets ex-China, that would account for $100,000 to $200,000. And forgive me, I don't know which one it is. I do know if institutions were to allocate 5% of their portfolios globally, ex-China, that use case alone would be $500,000 in addition to the $60,000 in Bitcoin's price. This is much like what happened with pension funds when it came to real estate in the 70s. It came to emerging markets in the 80s and 90s into the 2000s. We think this is the next iteration. This is the diversification into a completely new asset class, the first truly new asset class since the 1600s when equities launched.
Kathy, we are only down to two questions. We have 90 more questions for you, but I want to take the opportunity. I saw on your Twitter handle that you call yourself a women's advocate. By the way, I love the word advocate. You're not an activist, you're an advocate. I think a lot of women sees you as a vegan in the financial industry. You are one of the ones that got away with being extremely successful. How do you see your own role? And you know, it may sound a quirky question, but how serious do you take that role as a women's advocate and someone who sits very, very much on the top of a beautiful product in itself?
Thank you. Thank you so much, Steen, for that question. I take it very seriously. I take it very seriously for all young people, especially. I think it's our industry, which will be disrupted, by the way, so get on the right side of change, but our industry is one where performance can be measured every day. Now, do I look at performance every day? Of course I do, but do I take it to heart every day? No, we have a 5-year investment time horizon, but that idea of the financial world, the world is our oyster. We get to study how the world is going to work and invest in it and really play a part in making the world a better place. It is a wonderful career. And if anyone, but especially a woman, can get into a position where her performance is measured, for better or worse, I've had my bad years and good years, but you know, they average out over time. If you can get into a position like that but be a part of a team, because I think that the world is going to go much more collaborative as these technologies converge. So that this idea of being part of a team that excels in performance and being a really good team mate and always seeking the truth, not letting politics get in the way, encouraging collaboration, encouraging teamwork. I think that's the route to success. And if we're right on how much success is ready for the taking out there, if you devote your career, you work really hard, head down, politics aside, make these incredible numbers for your clients first and then your team second. It's an incredible career. Now, you have to have a thick skin. And you have to just keep your eye on pursuing the truth, because a lot of, if you see on Twitter, you know, there are a lot of haters. You just can't let that get in the way. Just move forward, do the right thing, and don't get distracted by the noise out there, because all of that other stuff is just noise. And I realize in certain companies, your performance will not be recognized. Your boss, even though you're making him look amazing, and that's your first priority, by the way, make your boss look amazing, like he's the most brilliant person who ever walked the earth. And if he or she does not reward that by giving you an opportunity to grow, move on and find the person who will do that.
I remember that thing. but Kathy, a final question from my side. We saw the fire in your eye when you talked about genomics. I find it very as a very exciting technology. I think MIT have coined this century the century of biology, and I really much believe in that. But is it also your biggest conviction in terms of all the disruptive technologies that you're looking at, or do you have something next side genomics that you think is probably even bigger? Or
so genomics, we believe still today, is the most underappreciated, is going to create the biggest surprises out there because we're so early. The autonomous taxi platform opportunity in transportation, we think that will happen more dramatically and sooner, because regulators actually do want to save lives. And because 80 to 90% of all accidents and fatalities in cars are caused by human error, we're seeing our regulators becoming much more friendly to Tesla and to autonomous travel generally, because their scorecard is saving lives. And with texting, deaths have gone up, especially with young people. So the regulators are going to enable autonomous transportation to scale faster than we think the regulatory approvals will take place for a lot of the genetic related medicine, the genomics medicine. Nonetheless, the genomics opportunity will be bigger longer term.
Kathy, it's been an absolute pleasure. And I will say on my behalf, and I'm sure that it goes through the whole audience, if they're not inspired after these almost 50 minutes with you, they cannot be inspired at all. So thank you from the bottom of our heart. You are very eloquent. You are very committed. I think the best attribute I can give you is that you can see in your eyes how much you love your job, how much you're working with this theme. And for me, that goes all the way from somewhere in the US to Copenhagen this afternoon. And so on behalf of Saxo, behalf of everyone watching, thank you very much for reaching out, and continue to be that beacon for women in finance. Trust me, we need more of you in this industry, and good luck to you and the team going forward. I understand you are changing the landscape from my old city of New York to Florida. I cannot understand that move, being in a half New Yorker, but good luck with that as well, Kathy, and best of wishes for the rest of the year.
Thank you very much, Dean. Thank you, Peter, as well. I've enjoyed this enormously, and I just love the innovative spirit that I find in Europe, Denmark, especially. I'm always impressed, and just love speaking to this kind of an audience, because I know we're all going to make this happen together.
We are, indeed. Yeah. Thank you for those words, and thank you for everybody for tuning in. And best of luck to everyone. And do follow Kathy online, everywhere. It's an amazing team she put together, as she said. And I'm pretty sure the whole team makes it look very good, right?
Yes, my secret weapons, those young people that you see on our team page, secret weapons. They aspire to transform the world and make it a better place. And they are brilliant.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.